Good morning, and welcome to the Hidden Profits Teleseminar Series. The purpose of this series is to explore ideas of how to make your business more profitable by becoming more efficient and reducing costs. In modern business today, we tend to focus first on revenue growth, that's most important, and second on financial engineering or re-engineering, and we completely overlook cost structure, except in direct cost in production or, as now, during a downturn. When we focus on cost, it is usually either just product cost or temporary budget slashing. Today, we have a lot of temporary budget slashing going on. I call this the corporate crash diet. Here's what happens. We have a big growth period like we've had in the last 10 years or so. Revenues are continually expanding. Sales are good. You might acquire a couple of other businesses. There's mergers going on, lots of merger activity. And at the end of the year, the income statement shows that there's a profit, and everybody thinks that's fantastic. Life is good. You can get easy credit and borrow money if you don't have enough cash, and everything's going along swimmingly. But it depends on a continuing strong economy. And then what happens? As in all business cycles, we eventually have a downturn. In today's environment, we probably have one of the bigger downturns than what most people have seen. But what ends up happening is sales projections start going down. They're lower. Actual sales are lower. And so a little bit of a panic starts setting in, is what are we going to do? And this is very similar to the panic that sets in for any man or woman who has a special event they want to go to, and they can't fit into the dress or the suit they want to wear. So they need to lose some weight, and they need to lose it fast. So companies need to lose some costs, and they need to lose it fast. So what do we do on our crash diet? We stop eating. In corporate America, we slash budgets, and we slash spending. We say we're going to reduce payroll by a certain percent across the board. We slash marketing budgets by a certain percent. We stop hiring. We maybe even lay off people. We stop buying anything but what is absolutely necessary. The plan is just to sit, wait out the downturn, and when the downturn is over, everything will get better. But what happens? All the people that we laid off, they were all doing things that are no longer getting done. The reduced marketing budget now causes sales to go down even more and potentially erode market share. So what ends up happening over time then, just like when we go on a crash diet, we're starving ourselves, right, to lose weight. We might lose weight for the event, but after the event is over, we go back to eating again. So in the case of the corporate crash diet, what we do is we start seeing more negative results or the downturn starts getting over with, and we start hiring back. And so the first thing we do is we start hiring people back, lots of times from temporary agencies, and then we hire them all back full-time. And frequently, just as in the crash diet where we gain more weight than what we lost, we end up hiring more people and having larger budgets than what we had before. We rarely change our lifestyles, and we rarely change corporate lifestyles. So this teleseminar series is about looking at ways to make incremental changes in corporate lifestyle, taking advantage of technology, services from our suppliers and service partners, and best practice business processes. We as humans, and especially a collections of humans in a business, don't really like change. However, when it happens incrementally and we build an environment of rewarding small change, it does not trigger these anti-change alarms in our psyches, and it helps us build better organizations over the long term. So our subject today is building a strong foundation. Before we can do anything, we have to have a good foundation. Before I get started, though, I'd like to tell you a little bit about my background. Once upon a time, when computers were just starting to be used in business, a young girl, me, graduated from high school. Her father desperately wanted her to become an accountant, but she said, "Oh, no, that'll take too long. I need to get an apartment and a new car. I want to get out on my own." So at that time in the kingdom, large companies were purchasing large computers and starting to automate transactions. But just the large computer wouldn't do anything. You needed people who could program those computers and make them do something. And this was really becoming a requirement because at that time companies were growing and they could no longer hire enough people to complete the transactions of the business in a timely manner. So this created the need for the people who were trained to write the programs on those computers. So the girl's prince of a high school counselor suggested that she enroll in a new curriculum in the junior college to become a computer programmer. So that was what she did. She didn't really know what a computer programmer did, but it sounded like a good idea. And it began a very exciting career. Her fairy godmother made sure that she secured a job with a company that had a tuition reimbursement program. So she decided to return to school and obtain her degree in accounting. Over the next 30 years, she worked with many companies to help them use technology tools that eventually were becoming ubiquitous, and to help them build foundations and use the technology to become more profitable organizations. She also built her own software consulting business and has gone through all the issues that many executives are facing in business today. So that's my story. And I've worked with a variety of companies during my career, and often in those companies, there's no real plan on how to use technology advances to improve the business and no real foundation on which to build. As a result of that, the technology becomes a collection of tools that are used individually, often without much value to the business. In Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, he cites several examples of companies that move dramatically ahead of their competition by using technology as a key component in their strategies. So today we're going to talk about what's required to have a strong foundation. So first, the key components of a foundation. Number one is an IT strategy or an IT plan that's integrated with what the business is planning to do, with what the business strategy is. That's number one important. You hear a lot about that today. You see a lot of articles written about how the most important thing is to integrate IT strategy with business strategy. The second is a good IT organization with a business leader at the head of that organization. So we're going to talk a little bit about what that IT organization looks like. In the old days, the IT organization was all internal people that had specialties in different areas in IT. Today, there are so many specialties and so many areas that people need to be familiar with that you would have to hire, that for most companies, except for the very largest, it's usually better in that your organization ends up being a group of supporting service organizations that help you, coordinated by your individual people. So we're going to talk about building that. Key systems, foundational type systems on which the appropriate processes and continual change can be built. And then management, key executive management that trusts and supports the IT environment, seeing IT more in the middle of the organization rather than just a cost department that's kind of stuck on the outside of the organization that nobody really knows what function they perform other than they keep the hardware going. And a commitment to efficiency and productivity, as the Japanese call it, the Kaizen approach to constant change. So let's first take a look at number one, an IT strategy integrated with the business strategy. By definition, a foundation is a basis on which something stands or is supported. So the foundation must fit with what is standing on it. In the case of business, the business is standing on the system and technology foundation that we create. So the foundation must be built with the growth of the business in mind. Too often you find today that business executives, the CFO, the CEO, the COO, they all get together and sometimes with some outside people, and they decide where the business is going. You know, they say, well, we're going to enter certain new markets, or we're going to come out with certain new products. We're going to target selected customers. We want to offer this kind of support. In order to be better than our competition, we have to do X, Y, and Z. But they all get together and they plan that. We're going to acquire some other businesses. So, you know, they say we're going to go into a strategic acquisition mode, and they're going to either acquire competitors, acquire their suppliers, acquire people downstream, whatever their acquisition strategy is, that's going to be their strategy for growth. So they get together and they decide all of that, and then, you know, they have lots of times these strategic consultants that help them, and they put together a plan on how they're going to do that, and off they march to do it. But then what they've forgotten about is that when they are successful with that strategy, they need to have a foundation of systems and processes and hard technology, the hardware and everything, that's going to support that. So without bringing that into line and saying, okay, if I'm going to have this strategy on how I'm going to build my business, what do I need to support that once I become successful at it? Without a strong information technology strategy that'll support the planned business strategy, you end up with a business that is frequently in chaos and is teetering on the brink. Sometimes you don't see it for a long time because here's what happens. Here's some examples that I have seen. Let's say that the company decided that they wanted to grow by acquisition, and they were going to acquire some other businesses, and whatever those businesses were. Sometimes, like I said, they could be competitors. Other times they can be in their supply chain line, suppliers or people underneath them, or sometimes they just decide they want to go into other types of businesses and become a big enterprise that is in a lot of different business areas. So they go off and they do all these acquisitions. And what happens is with every acquisition, you get a company that has their own processes on how they do things. They have their own technology system, so they'll have their own accounting system. They'll have their own technology people. They might have other systems like CRM or some unique systems that support a unique process within their organization. But they each have their own. And if there hasn't been a good strategy built on how you're going to consolidate those organizations together, and if there hasn't been a good base system selected that will support all the companies, you end up with this all these different systems, and none of them talk to each other. I had one client one time that had done this. They had acquired four businesses. They had grown from a $65 million company to a $300 million company almost overnight, a period of 18 months. And suddenly, the CEO that had brought this whole enterprise together and had this great enterprise suddenly felt like he was completely out of control. His words to me were that he was in Vegas 24/7. And he now was in a crisis mode of, if I don't hurry up and get some information, if I don't figure out what's going on in these companies, he realized his risk was that he could be heading for major problems, going over a major cliff and not even know what was coming. So we had to scramble to get him set up. I've had more than one company with that. I have another company that I've worked with, that they're a manufacturer, and they acquired a bunch of companies that were their competitors or that were in, that produced products similar to theirs. And they even had one of the companies that they purchased that was a subsidiary of a larger company. And so when that was spun off, they had to get off of the system that they were using by their original parent company. And now they were doing everything manually. And the results of that is they saw inventory grow dramatically because they didn't have good methods of purchasing and of understanding demand that was coming in. They had core processes out in the other locations that were separate from their primary location, and so they didn't have control over that. They had other systems out there that, even though the accounting department had consolidated and they had one accounting department, but that accounting department was using all the different systems. So it was very hard to have any standards and to know what was going on in the whole organization. I had another client that grew by acquisition. They were a small company. They acquired a whole bunch of their competitors over a 10 to 20 year period, and suddenly they found themselves as a multi-billion dollar corporation. And so in becoming a multi-billion dollar corporation, they now were looking for different types of markets, where before, when they were individually small companies, they had, and they had purchased all of them, their customers were small customers that only needed to do billing from that one location. So they had a good system that they had created in-house, and they put that system in every one of the new companies they purchased. So they had done that. But when they became a large organization, they started saying, well, our new strategy now is that we want to target national and international organizations, so we want to target large customers. And they brought on, you know, they were successful in that. They brought on many large accounts. But now a large account was going to be serviced out of multiple locations that they had. But that large account wanted consolidated invoicing. And management within the organization needed consolidated reporting about those customers that were now large organizations. And they found they couldn't do that because every one of their locations had their own version of their system, and they couldn't bring all the data together. And trying to bring the data together was a massively huge problem. So they had their accounting staff grew to try to bring together reporting. Their billing department grew so that they were manually consolidating invoices, and this was creating cash flow issues and also creating collection problems for them. So all of that had to be, so those are the kind of things that can happen when you start out with a business strategy and don't have a good strategy for how the technology is going to support what you want to do in your business. The result is you often get what you ask for, right, and you're successful, and you don't have the foundation, and now you have a very large investment that has to be done in a short period of time, so you end up shortcutting things and you never really get to where you need to be. So number two on the list that follows right along with that is how to build a solid IT organization with a leader that understands business that is going to be able to create the foundation that you now have defined that you need. So like I said before, in the old days, an IT organization was an internal department, and everybody in that department was an employee of the company, and you hired various skill sets that were needed. And the skill sets were usually very simplistic because you had big mainframe computers, so you needed people that understood how the operating systems of how those big mainframe computers worked. You needed people that could operate those big mainframe computers and all the peripheral equipment, printers and tape drives and disk drives that went along with it. You needed to have people that could program those computers so that they would do what you wanted them to do, because frequently there wasn't, initially there wasn't software that you could buy, but even once there became software that you could buy, you still needed programmers that could support that software, because the software companies at that time were strictly just that. They were product-driven companies that sold a product, and then you, the company that bought it, had to figure out how to support it. It would be like if today you bought an automobile and there wasn't a service department in the automobile dealership, and you had to hire the people you needed to maintain your own automobile. But as technology became ubiquitous, as it became used by everybody, and it became more and more complicated. You have in order to make technology easier to use, it becomes more complicated. If you look at the automobile today as an example compared to the automobile of 30 or 40 years ago, right, the automobile today has extremely complex systems on it that are all computer-driven that make, in some respects, they make the automobile easier for us as a user. You know, you have automated power systems. You get in it and the car talks to you and tells you when the oil needs to be redone. It tells you when your tires are low. It tells you everything that's going on in the car rather than you having to make, you know, rather than you having to go out and check these systems. It'll tell you everything that's going on. So while it makes the car somewhat easier for us to use, it makes the car more complicated for the people that work on it and have to fix it. The same is true in technology today. The easier that the technology becomes for us to use, the more options that we have with internet and the complexity of the communications we have, the more complex and specialized the people that support it have to become. So it becomes very unwieldy for us to hire all of the people that we need on a full-time basis to support the technology we have. So what happens is, you know, good entrepreneurs spring up and they create companies that do this. So today, you know, it all comes under the broad heading of outsourcing. But you have companies that support your hardware. You have companies that support all your software. You have companies that provide programming support if you need that. There's a whole industry out there. You have companies that will host so that you don't have to have hardware in your organization except for the workstations that everybody works on, that will host all that. You can go out with software as a service on the web. So building a solid IT organization today is not building a big internal organization. It is ensuring that you find competent key suppliers and service personnel that can support your organization and that can build the foundation that you need, and having people on your internal staff that can manage all of those support people. Because if you don't have people that can manage them, then you end up with the support people not knowing what one has to do versus the other. You have things falling through the cracks. You have suppliers pointing at each other. So it takes a strong coordination / management team to make sure that all of the companies that you have hired, all of the support companies that you have hired, work together. And you also have to have some feet on the street yourself. It's very difficult. There are companies that do it, but generally it's better if you have some internal people. Key internal people are some people that know how to support the hardware and the Microsoft systems that you have so they can do training and answer basic questions. You also want somebody on your staff that's trained in the key systems you use, the key accounting systems, or what we call ERP systems, and other key, so if you have a key manufacturing system, so that they know how to get reports out, how to do some of the basic maintenance on those systems, etc. So it becomes a true design job of how you're going to design the type of organization you're going to have. And that design changes as your company grows and matures and goes through various stages of its own life cycle. You will change the types of things that you have outsourced. You might even change your outsourced vendors. When you're small, you might be able to work with a really small vendor. As you grow, you might need a larger vendor that can support you. You might bring more functions in-house. So there's a lot of ways that changes. And it requires at the head, a strong person that understands both the business and the technology. And sometimes that's split into two people. It's generally called a CIO, Chief Information Officer. You also hear the term CTO, Chief Technology Officer. So sometimes that person is broken into two, where you have the Chief Technology Officer, or CTO, that handles all the technology. And the CIO is more of a business person, and he or she deals with the coordination with executive management and understanding the business. I strongly recommend that a person have both, at least a little bit, of both disciplines. So you find candidates for CIOs come from two areas. One, in smaller businesses and mid-sized businesses, it is traditional for the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, to also wear the CIO hat. And the CFO, while he or she understands the business, understands, keeps track of all the financial information about the company and everything, is generally not really qualified as a CIO and needs good, strong support. And so that could come from a part-time person that the company might hire to advise the CFO and guide the CFO on what to do with technology. The other area where CIOs come from is they are technologists that are moving up the ladder and want to get into executive and management roles. And while that's very good, you should make sure that there is a training program if the candidate has not already gone out on their own and received education in the business and best of all know your type of business, then there needs to be a training program put in place where that person can learn the business and learn the type of business that you have, because you need both of those disciplines in order to be a really good, successful CIO. So that is building your IT organization and your strategy. So in order to do that, you really, the key function to first hire is this CIO. And again, it can be a part-time person. There are lots of part-time CIOs available. And actually, I highly recommend that for a small, growing company, because there are many CIOs out there with experience in large organizations that have retired from that and are interested in doing part-time work, and can be very beneficial to the company that's growing and working with the CFO. So that's the first key person you need within your organization. Then that person should be able to start building the strategy and determining what then other people they need in the organization, and then move into our number three part, key systems. The key systems that have to be in place in an organization in order for them to have a good foundation on which to build efficiency and good business practices. Excuse me. Too often today, management thinks that MS Office products, i.e. Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Access, are all that's needed along with a server and maybe an accounting system. And because you have to have a general ledger because your bank wants some financial statements. And that's all that's needed, and they're in business. And for really small beginning companies, that probably is all that's needed. But it doesn't take very long before you've grown into an organization that needs a little bit better foundation than that. So some of the basics that I recommend, a lot of it depends on the business necessities and the type of business you are, but I believe everybody should have, first of all, a good ERP system. ERP stands for Enterprise Resource, and it's a little bit of a misnomer, but what it really is all of your system modules that support processing from sales order all the way through to the general ledger and producing financial statements. So key components in an ERP system are generally some type of order management, billing and accounts receivable, inventory, purchasing, and accounts payable, and general ledger. You also might see what's called a job cost or project accounting module in with that for companies that work on a project type basis, like engineering firms, construction firms, consulting firms, accounting firms, those types of businesses. So those are the key things that are in your key ERP system. There are ERP systems today that you can purchase that range in cost from a few hundred dollars up to a few million dollars. And a company during its life cycle is going to have multiple ERP systems. And a good strategy is to always make sure that you have an ERP system in place today that will support your growth for at least 5 years. The mistake a lot of companies make is they stay on their entry-level ERP systems way too long. They will stay on an ERP system where the company has gone out of business and it's no longer supported before they move off of it. And those type of things weaken your foundation because your foundation isn't big enough. So your ERP or general business system is extraordinarily important. For a manufacturing company, the corresponding MRP, or Material Requirements Planning System, the system that plans all of your manufacturing, is critical. Today's manufacturing, it doesn't take very long before you're too big to manually manage all of the demand that comes in and the bill of materials and everything that needs to be ordered in order to make sure you can get product out the door. So what happens if you don't have a good MRP system? And by the way, a good MRP system needs to be integrated with your good ERP system. But what happens if you don't have a good MRP system is you'll see things like inventories will grow out of control because people within the company are constantly purchasing to make sure that they don't run out of things that you have to have. So you have big inventory growth. The second thing that happens is you will find that you can't meet the deadlines of customers. Customers will say, I need this in 2 weeks, and there's absolutely no way you can meet it in 2 weeks because you haven't been doing any planning. You don't know how long it takes your suppliers to get component parts to you. If you manufacture the component parts, you don't have a good handle on the metrics on how long it takes for you to manufacture those component parts. So very quickly, the manufacturing line gets out of whack. You will see a lot of emergency or situations where you're stopping manufacturing of one customer's product in order to quickly put somebody else's request on because that's become the hot requirement for the day. So instead of having planning out for a week or so, you will have, you know, daily firefighting planning. You'll also find that you start running multiple shifts because you can't get things done in the shift that was originally required. So that costs extra money. So then your cost of manufacture goes up. So those are things that can happen if you don't have a good MRP system. CRM, which is customer relationship management, is getting to be very important for companies managing their sales cycle. Today, in our competitive environments, follow-up and staying on top of what the customer needs, what the customer history has been, is critically important. And a good CRM system will do that. I talk about billing also. I see too many companies today that don't use the integrated billing function within their ERP systems. So, of course, first of all, my belief is that your billing should be able to be done in your ERP system, and you need to select an ERP system that supports the type of billing that you do. So, for example, if you are a consulting or engineering or accounting firm and you need to bill based on projects, or a construction firm, and you need to bill based on what's gone on the project and collect all the costs that are on that project, then you really need to have a module within your ERP system, and those are usually called job cost or project accounting, that will support that so that you're not manually doing this billing. I worked with one client one time that was manually pouring over labor distribution reports from their payroll processor that in order to get the hours that they needed in order to bill their clients. That is an extraordinarily inefficient way of doing it. I also see customer after customer after customer that their billing is done on spreadsheets or Word documents. And so the invoicing that actually goes to the customer is on somebody's spreadsheet on a hard drive, and then that gets sent into accounting that at some point enters that information into the AR system so they know what AR they have. And so problems with that are that, first of all, your aged receivables is never accurate. You never really know how much people owe you. You have lots of problems in recording cash payments and knowing where it came from, what invoices it's supposed to be applied to. Your customers get frustrated because they call your accounting department or they need copies of invoices and nobody can find them because the invoice numbering isn't the same as the number that's in the system, and on infinitum. So your billing really needs to come from the ERP system unless you have some sort of very unique billing like, for example, telephone companies have. But then the billing needs to be integrated with the ERP accounts receivable system so that it can be available right away in the ERP AR system, and they're integrated together. Integrated email today along with cell phones. A lot of companies need document management today. Document management systems are key to improving the way information flows and documents flow throughout an organization and retrieving documents. Today, companies are in a variety of locations and trying to keep the paper filing cabinets and all the paper filed so that somebody can find them and check them out becomes a logistics nightmare, and also routing paper for approval. So having good document management systems, especially document management systems integrated with your ERP and MRP systems, really enables you to have some good process flow. Business management dashboards are extraordinarily important because you can have all of these transactions monitored and all of your knowledge workers very efficient, but if management can't get the key metrics that they're looking for out of these systems, you know, part of it is a waste. And so these management dashboards help companies know, like this one client I worked with that managed big construction projects and they felt like they were out of control. I explained to them that if they had everything set up correctly, they would record all of the what we call committed costs to the project every day. And at the end of every day, they should be able to look at a pro forma financial statement for that project and know where they stand in terms of how much cost they've spent and what they're able to bill. You also want web integration. You know, when the web first came out, companies went out and put up a website, and they didn't see any need to integrate that with their current systems. Even back in the beginnings of the Internet, I had numerous clients that called because they were selling stuff on the Internet, and it wasn't integrated with their back office ERP system. So here's the kind of things that would happen. Somebody would want to place an order on the Internet, and the company wasn't able to let them know that it was out of stock or whether it was even available because they didn't have information from the perpetual inventory system loaded up on the website. So you'd have customers that would order things and expect it to be shipped within the next day or two, and when the order comes down to the company, they can't fill it right away because they have to go order it or manufacture it in order to get it out. You had companies that couldn't get the orders into from the web into the ERP system, so then they would have emails given to the warehouse for the warehouse to pull so they could ship on time. But then the fact that that product had been pulled, the fact that there was an order and recognizing revenue wasn't in the system. And you had a scenario that the analogy I used was the old I Love Lucy show where Lucy and Ethel were on a chocolate manufacturer's conveyor line, and their job was to wrap the chocolate in the foil. And as the conveyor line sped up, they got behind, and so they were pushing chocolate into their mouths, and chocolate pieces were going by without foil on them and everything else. And that's what you have when a web presence is not integrated with the corresponding ERP and MRP systems that the company is using. Plus today, there's so many other ways that you can integrate your web presence to improve efficiency within your organization and enable your customers to do more for themselves. You can push billing up to the internet so that your customers, especially if they're other business customers, can pull their invoices off the internet. But even consumers, you can set up situations where the consumers, where your customers can pay online, where you can integrate with your suppliers through your systems and their internet presence. So today there is so much integration that can be done through the internet and can improve efficiency and reduce costs within a company that it's just unbelievable, and so few companies take advantage of it. So your web integration and a full integrated web presence are extraordinarily important. So having these systems is important, but not just having the systems, it's how they integrate. And I think I've been stressing that when we talk about them. If you have each one of these systems independent and they're not built to be integrated with each other, you are creating problems because you have to create bridges or you have to create manual systems to integrate them. So I see a lot of companies that take the strategy that they call best of breed, and they buy they buy systems that are the best MRP system, the best CRM system, the best ERP, the best document management, but they don't talk to each other, and that creates more problems than having all the same from one vendor. You need to look at that. Number four, management commitment to support technology as the core of the business. Lots of times on business diagrams, you'll see the IT department off to the side. Nobody really knows what the IT department does. They're off in a corner somewhere. Nobody really pays attention to them. Periodically, IT comes over to try and find out what the business is doing. If you're working in an environment where the business is truly integrated and the IT department is building this foundation that the business is going to grow on, then you have the IT department sort of in the middle helping, servicing all of the other departments in the entire business as a whole. So you need to have management commitment to building that type of structure within an organization. And, of course, you need an IT organization that is committed to support that. Lots of times IT organizations, and I can hear you all out there right now, IT organizations have gotten their bad rap by their own doings. They are unresponsive. They buy technology just for technology's sake because they think it's cool. They have people within the organization that don't understand the business, so they're not able to really help. So the getting back to when you build your internal IT organization and the service companies that support you around that, they need to be people that can provide the responsiveness and be responsive to the organization so that they deserve having that key role within an organization. And the CIO is key to that. The CIO can't be a second-tier executive. He must be a key individual responsible for ensuring that all the other department strategies and initiatives are achieved and making sure that they have a foundation for that. So that role is key. And then finally is a corporate culture that supports continual change and improvement. This has to come from the top, from all executives. It is all executives working together on how they can continually change. It's rewarding employees that find ways to improve operations most of the companies I go into that I find that are, that have got issues, the people in the organization know what's wrong. The people in the organization have ideas on what can be done to fix it, but they don't have the ability to bring those ideas forth. They don't have, they're not able to get the support for them, and they don't know, you know, like what technology to select or how to create best business practices. And so you really need to have a culture that supports that. In Jim Collins, he's the author of Good to Great. In his new book, Why the Mighty Fail, and I recommend that for almost everybody, Why the Mighty Fail, he talks about complacency and resistance to change as being the greatest dangers for a company. Because companies grow, things are going well, they tend to think that everything they touch is going to turn to gold. They don't need to look at their systems and processes because, after all, everything's going okay. But in reality, there's a big mess that's growing underneath. And as more and more transactions, more and more volume gets laid on those inadequate systems and technologies, it starts to break. And eventually you have the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. And chaos reigns, and then the company starts going down through the five stages that Jim Collins lays out in his book of Why the Mighty Fail. So it's extremely important to have an organization that believes in and practices constant small change, or as the Japanese put it, Kaizen. So that's all I had for today. I'm going to unmute the lines and see if we have any questions or any comments. So hold on just a minute. Okay, everybody should be unmuted. Do we have any questions or comments?
Linda Muhammad.
Uh-huh.
Well, yes, what you're laying out is very needed for small companies. And
yeah.
One of the things that company danger signal that I see in companies is when they use Excel spreadsheets excessively to build accounting and reporting systems.
That's true. And
I have seen fairly large companies do this, and to me that's a major danger signal. That means they're doing a Band-Aid approach, and these Excel spreadsheets need to be audited regularly for their formulas, and you really shouldn't be depending on that to the extent that some of these people I see do.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Excel and QuickBooks.
Yeah.
I think are two of the biggest dangers that companies have today. So we will take that issue up in future ones, and you know, perhaps Mohammed, you can talk to that issue. So
and I mean, your thing about building the ERP, no matter what, ERP for some reason seems to be identified with the bigger companies, but the truth is, anything that we do is to build an ERP system even in the smaller companies, so that their resource planning, resource management gets done properly from the beginning. And you can build it in a modular form as long as you have set out a path on which you're constantly progressing in developing your ERP systems.
Correct. Correct, and I appreciate you bringing that up. You're right. It's not just for big companies.
Yeah, and you can set out a path. And the other thing is, you know, people should have, like you said, the software, the people, the systems, and the technology that all form. People think that if they buy the software, that's the entirety of the process. And when they fail big time. It's much more difficult to correct a situation than establish a situation properly the first time.
I I couldn't agree with you more.
I think
that is key. You're right. It's to establishing it correctly the first time and continuing to look at what you have to do in order to keep up as your company grows. Because as the company grows, you know, it's kind of just like when you start out a new family, right? You get married and you move into a small apartment. And then you have your first child. You move into a small apartment and you've got, you know, your small compact one car or whatever. And then you have your first child and you say, okay, well, we might still be able to live in the apartment or we have to move into a little bit bigger apartment. But as the family grows, you have to continually look at what you need to support that family. You know, if the family grows big enough, you may end up with a four-bedroom house and three or four cars, you know, that are needed for all that, or a big SUV or something like that. And the same is true for business.
Yeah, and all those things you have to plan.
Right.
You have to plan ahead and do it systematically.
That's correct. That's
business
absolutely correct.
It's all about establishing systems systematically. That's what I think.
I agree, and I appreciate your comments on that. Well, if we don't have any other comments, I think we'll go ahead and close for this week. Our next teleseminar is scheduled for June 4th, which is next week, not 2 weeks, and I needed to do that in order to accommodate a schedule I have. So we will have our next meeting on Thursday, June 4th. For those that have signed up, you'll get an automatic reminder for that. Please pass on invitations to clients, to friends, to anybody that you think could use this. And we will start next week delving into individual areas and what to look for in the company and solutions for individual areas. So thank you very much for your attention today, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye, Linda.